Hello, SF Signal listeners. It's me, your host, Patrick, ATFMB. As of this recording, it's been a week since LunCon 3 and the 2014 Hugo Awards. And if you missed them, I wasn't there. But Gail Carriger was, and she was kind enough to accept on behalf of myself and SF Signal for the win of Best Fan Cast. This was the third year that we've been nominated. I think the award's actually only been around for 3 years. But this is the third time, and third time's a charm. Thanks to all of you wonderful listeners, we were able to take home the Hugo, sort of. Gail still has it. They're shipping it. She assures me. I don't think it'll end up on a shelf at her house, but you never know. I'm watching you, Carriger. Anyway, at the almost exact same moment that happened, I had my 72-year-old mother fall and break her leg. She broke both bones in her right leg. She dislocated her ankle and she broke her foot. So here at Casa de ATFMB, we've been having a lot of fun getting her. She had to have surgery. She had to have all this kind of stuff happen. So it's been a lot of fun. Haven't really had a whole lot of time to think about and enjoy the Hugo win. But I wanted to let everybody know here today how much I appreciate you and how awesome it is. And thank you so much. It means a lot. And, you know, unfortunately, with family medical stuff, I wasn't able to get an episode out last week. But I have one for you now that was recorded a couple weeks ago. So I apologize and for not getting an episode out. And I thank everyone for their kind words on Twitter and Facebook and all your positive thoughts and prayers and all that good stuff. It was really, really appreciated. And again, thank you for the Hugo Award. Now let's get on with an episode of SF Signal that is obviously a classic and will go down in the annals of some of the greatest, best fan cast stuff that's ever been done. Trust me. Let's talk about Star Wars. Signal. This is the SF Signal Podcast. I am your host. My name is Patrick Hester. I am an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. And we're back again to talk about stuff. This week, we're going to talk a little bit about reboots. And as far as they relate to kind of books, comics, movies, everything. But before I get into that, I do want to say hello to my panel. Tonight I've got three people who had nothing better to do because just like me, they couldn't get to Worldcon. Well, actually, one of them doesn't like Worldcon. She goes to DragonCon, if I'm not mistaken. But I don't know if it's a like or dislike thing. It's just a... I don't know.
It's a Delilah? Lot cheaper to drive 30 miles, my friend.
Gotcha. Okay. So Delilah Dawson.
Yes.
Say hello.
Hi. I am Delilah S. Dawson. I write the Blood series for Pocket, which is steampunk, paranormal, fantasy, romance. And my most recent book is a young adult Southern Gothic horror called Servants of the Storm, which just came out last week and will creep you out.
Congrats.
Thank you. I can be found at whimsydark.com and on any of the social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and Tumblr. I am Delilah S. Dawson. So I'm very easy to find and not at all scary.
I know I've asked you before, but I forget a lot of things. What is the genesis of Whimsy Dark?
It happened one day when our good friend Sam Sykes was talking about grimdark and like why is grimdark a thing? Why do you get to make that up? Can't I just add any two words together and have my own genre? And I was like, oh, I guess that means I write whimsy dark because everything I write is kind of dark but whimsical. And then when I kind of branched out in genres, and my agent told me I needed to start thinking about branding, it seemed like a good way to tie everything together.
Very cool. Very good.
And the URL wasn't taken, which these days is like crazy.
Yeah, I know. You know what? When we talk about URLs, I always go back to Saturday Night Live. In the Will Ferrell era, they did a mock commercial for an insurance company that was the last company on Earth to get a website.
Yeah.
And therefore, all the website names were already taken, but it was your typical insurance company kind of commercial. You know, it's like a bunch of smiling people and they're talking about how they're here to help you. And it was very kind of serious and this and that. And they said, you know, we were the last company to get on the internet. And that's why, you know, our URL is a little different. But, you know, if you come to clownpenis.fart, we can help you. And they just, and they ran with it and they were all straight faced and it was the funniest dang thing. Anyway.
Those were the good old days.
Yes, those were the good old days when Saturday Night Live was funny.
Oh.
Next up, we have Jay Garman.
Hi, I'm Jay Garman. In a previous life, I used to blog for CBS Interactive on geek culture. Then my career got rebooted and now I appear most Saturdays on Tech Talk Radio in Chicago.
Without a mustache or a bra.
Not simultaneously, no.
And now, before I introduce our third panelist, I do want to take you back to 1988. So it's 1988. It's Marvel Comics. Chris Claremont and Louise Simonson, I think.
Louise Simonson, yep.
Yeah, wrote a part of a massive crossover called The Fall of the Mutants, which introduced Apocalypse, the mutant, you know, family of books and stuff. And of course, Apocalypse had his four horsemen and turned Warren Worthington, the Angel, into one of his four horsemen. And now apparently, Jeff, you've started a podcast about the horsemen.
Yes. That's exactly what I've done.
When is the first episode of that come out?
I'm turning into, I've gone from being Paul Lynde to being Ed McMahon suddenly. I don't know why.
Yes, sir. You are correct.
Yes, I am Jeff Patterson. I am one of the three co-hosts of the Three Horsemen podcast. I blog at Gravity Lens, which can be found at baddaystudio.com. I am at Jeff Patterson 11 on Twitter, and I write a genre I call drunky punk, which is basically the subversion of tropes through the application of bourbon.
Good bourbon, or
yeah, very good bourbon.
Okay,
we've had this conversation, Jeff.
Yes, we have.
Four Roses, good bourbon.
I'm developing a taste right now. I'm actually quite on a kick of the Kirkland brand from Costco, which is made. It's bottled at I forget the name of the distillery, but several bourbon drinker blogs have been raving about it, and I tried it earlier this year for the first time, and every time I pass a Costco with a liquor section, I pick myself some up.
And yeah. That's okay, I have to ask, does it come in an 8-gallon drum?
No, it comes in...
You have to get that at Sam's Club.
It is very good, though. It's very, very similar to Four Roses, maybe a slightly bit smokier.
This is a complete digression, but there's an ongoing debate between Michelle and I over Sam's Club versus Costco. And I've had a Sam's Club membership for a long time because my mom works at Walmart. And so we could get the, you know, family thing going and you get a little bit of a discount and you get the Sam's Club thing. Michelle prefers Costco. And my joke is that the closest Costco to my house is in Colorado Springs. Therefore, I'm not going to go to Costco. But I'm curious. Let's do a nod to Sword and Laser here. Jeff, what are you drinking?
Right now, I am drinking some Wegmans lemonade, actually. So,
Jay, what do you got going?
Diet caffeine-free Coca-Cola with lemon.
So basically, you're drinking swill.
Yes.
It has absolutely no purpose in the world.
It's just nostalgia. I've given up caffeine. I've given up sugar. I cannot give up everything else about soda, which is the most pointless part of soda, which is brown coloring, horrible flavor, and fizziness.
And see, you can tell where Jay grew up because he's saying soda instead of pop or instead of Coke.
Actually, okay. I was trained to call it Coke, and I have actively rebelled against my raising.
Delilah, what are you drinking?
I am sharing the dregs of a glass of... Cabernet with a really pesky fly.
Pesky but refined because he's enjoying
it. I actually got to drink most of it, but he won't give up.
And I will admit to having some Dr. Pepper tonight.
I have a can of Moxie in the fridge I could break out if you need me to.
Now this is
that like a can of Whoop-Ass, but it's a can of Moxie? Because I could use that.
Now, I do want to go on record as saying this is the regular Dr. Pepper, not the diet Dr. Pepper that our bagel overlord prefers.
Oh, you lose! Oh,
you dropped the bagel!
I did. But yeah, if you've ever been anywhere with Mr. DiNardo, he orders the diet Dr. Pepper whenever possible. So there. I completely forgot what we were talking about. Oh, wait. Yes, here. I know what we're talking about. So, the topic. In comics, television, and movies, reboots are fairly commonplace. But what about in books? Can you think of a beloved book or a series of books that was rebooted either by the original author or a new author? And was it successful? And of course, this is leading into yet another discussion with me of the Star Wars reboot within books. And to kind of bring it in line with the new movies. And have we ever seen a mass dumping of books the way the folks behind Star Wars or dumping the expanded universe before? Does anyone else care but me? Apparently not. Is it a slap in the face to fans? Yes. Should we just shut up and be happy there's another movie coming? Does Guardians of the Galaxy change the expectation and raise the bar for that new Star Wars movie? Does Mark Hamill look badass in that picture that's going around on Facebook right now? I kind of want to mark it up and, you know, paint his face like a Joker and say, why so serious?
Of course you do.
I would rather see him as Cockknocker from the Kevin Smith movies.
Well, now, if Kevin Conroy is the voice of Batman, Mark Hamill is the voice of the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you know. What about the authors who created those expanded universe books? Should they care that their words are no longer canon? Does it matter? Does anyone care? Jeff?
On the Star Wars thing, yeah, we've seen it done before. We saw it with Star Trek.
Did they reboot the books?
I have no idea if they rebooted the books, but...
They rebooted the movie.
Everything, with the exception of the Q appearance in the IDW Star Trek comic that just happened a little while ago, which certifies that it is a separate timeline because it opens with Picard and he tells him, hey, when Spock went back in time, he diverged the timelines and I'm going there now to screw things up. And last I heard, that comic was still being considered canon. So. Hmm.
Well, the comics, now, the Star Trek comics have always been kind of fun because anytime a movie would come out, they would change the comics to accommodate the movie. Mm-hmm. But the books weren't necessarily, I mean, they may have started writing new books with the new timeline, but as far as I know, they just kept kind of pumping out the books.
Yeah.
To keep it going.
But it's certainly not unheard of. I mean, you could say that all of those, the several, you know, Superman novels that came out in the late 70s don't count anymore. You could say that all of the various manga and illustrated novelettes of Ultraman that came out in Japan, because Ultraman gets rebooted just about every year over there. You know, they kind of ignore everything that's gone before every time there's a new iteration.
Now, but Superman, can't you just say that those books took place on Earth 1453?
Yeah, you could if you wanted to, but I'm not going to get that deep into it. So. you know, it's going to happen. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, basically the intent of Abrams' Star Trek was to say, oh, by the way, none of that other stuff happened.
Right, but they didn't just like dump it and start over. They tried to explain it with time travel, which is slightly different than what Star Wars is doing.
Then rewriting a history. I get it. Well, I'm not all that familiar with the books. I'm familiar with the Expanded Universe comics, and yeah, I understand what you're saying.
The difference between Star Wars and Star Trek there is that Star Trek's sort of always been honest that the novels and comics are not canon.
Yes.
With the exception of the new IDW series, which was written by the screenwriters of the movies.
Right.
That series has been explicitly labeled as canon by them, especially the Countdown series, which supposedly bridged the Next Generation timeline and the movie timeline. But Star Trek has just been out and out up front with it, like, we're going to sell you books, and they're going to be fun, and then the next movie's going to come out and completely pave over it.
Yeah.
I mean, it got to the point, like, you knew from the TV show that Will Reichel's middle initial was T, and if you go through, you go to Memory Beta, which is like the wiki of all Expanded Universe Star Trek canon, there's like a running list of all the different names that T stood for based on which novel you read.
Mm.
Wasn't until the Second Chances episode where you met
Thomas
William Thomas Riker, that it became canon what it stood.
And it was Thomas, Another example that you're just bringing that up reminds me of is when the Galactica reboot was on, there was a spinoff novel that was done by Jeffrey Carver, I want to say, that gave the that gave flashbacks of Altar's youth. And in his youth, he had been somewhat privileged, if I remember correctly.
No. Baltar?
The same month, the Galactica comic started, and I forget who did that. I want to say maybe it was Dynamite, but it might have been Boom. I'm not certain. And the third issue of that had a flashback to Baltar's childhood, where he was quite deprived, and basically, once he got past his teen years, sort of faked his way up through the ranks to become the person that he was. And these two publications came out literally within 10 days of one another.
Just to throw it out there, my absolute favorite Baltar moment was actually in Eureka.
Yes.
And he played a scientist who helped found Eureka in the 40s with Albert Einstein, and then through time travel, traveled to the quote-unquote present with Jack and Allison and them. And there was an episode where everybody was seeing something. They were seeing visions of other of. So Jack was seeing Allison's ex-husband. Allison was seeing her best friend, who was Jack's ex-girlfriend. And they asked the guy, the character, I forget his name in the show, but the guy who Baltar essentially. They said, "What do you see?" And he said, "A tall, leggy blonde in a red dress."
Uh-huh. That's lovely.
I thought that was hilarious. That was wonderful. Well,
it's like thinking about sex. No, six. Six women. Six.
I just thought it was a nice little tie back. Come on, Delilah. What are you thinking on this so far?
I am very much a creature of the moment. I don't think about the past very much. I'm like a goldfish. Like, I just forget things. So, I mean, I read all the Star Wars books. Like, I guess I gave up on some of the Vong books because, like, you can only fight the Vong for so long before you're like, this is the same thing. And I have friends who have written and are writing Star Wars books. And, like, I think that they should always exist and be what they are. But the way that my mind works, like, I can accept two different canons, which, of course, isn't what a canon is. But, like, I don't even think that anyone needs to, like, you don't need to say, like, this is all rubbish and this didn't happen and this is the real thing and this isn't. Like, you just make more books. The people who are consuming this rabidly are going to keep consuming it, and some of them will get angry, but they get angry at everything. I mean, I know I've heard that there's, like, enormous discussions over, you know, many Bothans died. How many? 24. That's not many compared to Alderaan. But, I think that these things can all exist simultaneously, and I mean, in the same way, you know, with Star Trek, like, there was the old one and the middle ones and the new ones, and I'm fine with all of that. But I think I'm a more easygoing geek consumer than the people that are mainlining this news.
Well, she brings up a good point. You're talking about, I mean, we've learned this from comic books. You're talking about, this is one of the first times, you know, aside from Star Trek, that we've seen a franchise that has had legs for this long, and you cannot have a continuity run that long, pass through a number of different writers, and still maintain any form of actual integrity, not without throwing in, you know, retcons left and right.
What do you mean?
Look at, you know, the history of DC and Marvel and how many times things have contradicted and how many times they've had to go back and correct them. Well, now you're going into Star Wars and they're saying, hi, we're going to make a new movie. And this is Disney we're talking about. And we're going to, you know, try to get it to as wide of an audience as we can and really try to get this franchise up and running again. And suddenly they're realizing, hey, we've got the same mess we're running into with Marvel. We've got, you know, 20, 30 plus years, whatever, of stuff we have to, you know, now cope with. Do we just start with a clean slate and try to do something compelling, or do we, you know, basically play fan service left and right?
Well, and it's interesting you bring that up, because Marvel has sort of done this dance where they've openly said there is a Marvel Cinematic Universe, the MCU, which has its own continuity, is in no way beholden explicitly to any of the comic book continuity, and that's actually an asset.
Yes.
Because that made 60 years of Marvel continuity is basically now just R&D for the movie universe. But what's made that work is that Kevin Feige and before him Avi Arad basically were the kingpins of that universe and made sure all the parts fit together. If Kevin Feige gets hit by a bus tomorrow, which God forbid he won't, all
did
of
did you just say God forbid he won't?
Yes.
So you want him to get hit by a bus tomorrow?
I don't want him to get hit by a bus.
I think you had a double negative.
I will live with that. I'll retcon that in the post.
Okay, good.
It could all fall apart because that's the issue I think that Jeff's speaking to here is that it can work. It worked for Star Wars when there was someone at Lucasfilm basically tightly overseeing all of this. But at some point, the money got too good and it just got too easy to keep publishing books. Mm-hmm. I remember when Kevin J. Anderson, when I was at DragonCon a few years back, talked about how he got one of his first Star Trek gigs because he'd been doing some writing here and there, and they brought him in to do the text for a book of Ralph McQuarrie's Star Trek art, a coffee table book.
Yeah.
And when he got there, they brought him in because he was the only author in the Star Wars stable at that point who was within driving distance of Skywalker Ranch. So they didn't have to pay to fly him, which goes to the level of continuity and integrity effort was going on back then. So while he's there going through, he hears the editor of Lucas' book saying, we really need to put out some more books, but George has said we can't introduce any new characters. That really hamstrings us. And he said, well, you don't have to. There's all kinds of stories untold, like the guy in A New Hope who says we don't serve droids here. Well, why doesn't he serve droids? And the guy who's wanted a death sentence on 12 systems. Well, why does he have the death sentence? And then he realized they were staring at him.
I've got the death sentence in the system.
Right. So that's sort of the continuity mining that they have in mind. But you, at some point, you've literally given a backstory to every single background character. The power droid that goes dunk dunk and runs into stuff had a major character arc in the expanded universe. At some point, you've got to introduce new people. And to Delilah's point, they said, well, let's try this thing called the Vong, and oh, dumpster fire.
So help me out here then. If you can't introduce new characters, where did Mara Jade come from?
They eventually had to.
You can squirt out some babies.
Eventually, Mara Jade was in the first trilogy of the extended universe, the Thrawn trilogy.
Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
Huh? I want to write like a Star Wars young adult. Like I would love to write, you know, like the story of a girl who goes off to the Jedi Academy and, you know, falls in love with two boys. One that's headed, you know, down the Jedi path, and the other one's starting to lean Sith. But so far, nobody's biting for that. But man, I'd love to.
Why don't you write Ahsoka's last story? Hello, Master. No.
Happily ever afters. I only write happily ever afters.
Delilah, I think they might have done. There was a story about a girl, and I want to say it was one of the old Republic comics. Oh God! But it's firing a neuron that there's a girl who's in an academy. There's two boys that she likes. She has a rival there.
Well, that's what every YA book is about, but they just sell like hotcakes.
They do.
Maybe thinking of Jedi versus Sith, which has Rain and they're recruited by Lord Hoth, and the Thought Bomb ends it, and it's Darth Bane sets up the rule of two at the end of that, and that's the side she chooses. Spoiler.
Ooh.
Hmm. Delilah, I do know. You know, I've spoken with an editor, Sarah Peed, who's at Ballantine. Who actually she's part of the Hydra imprint, Hail Hydra, and the she was telling me that like no one at Ballantine can touch Star Wars. It's its own little deal. It's its own very tight knit kind of group, and they don't take unsolicited. They don't take, you know, no one at Ballantine can look at your manuscript or pass it along. It's like super 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 weird.
I've heard stories about the things where you want, you know, you're this kid that grows up and you become a writer and you're like, God, that would be the coolest thing. And then you actually see, you know, they drop like the 47-pound Bible on your table and and then you kind of start to regret it in your big bed of money. But well, it's like my husband, my family's big into Transformers. Like you can't walk across my house at night without stepping on them. And my husband's like, oh, if only we could write, you know, Transformers books. And I'm like, eh, I don't think you'd love them after that.
Does your husband have an iPhone?
No.
Do you have an iPhone?
No.
Oh. There's a free Bejeweled game called Bejeweled Blitz. And I swear the voice on there is Optimus Prime.
Well, that's Peter Cullen. He does lots of stuff. That dude's a boss.
I think it is him, because when he says, you know, 30 seconds, I'm thinking, oh no, Bumblebee's in trouble.
Well, I think he's Eeyore too. Like that dude, he's a busy man, that Peter Cullen.
I don't know. So, but here's my thing. So I guess I'm like the most upset person about this whole Star Wars thing. I don't like it that George Lucas, despite what Jay is talking about, George Lucas essentially said when they started with the Thrawn trilogy and they decided to make more books moving forward, he said, you could do anything you want after Return of the Jedi. That's the part you can play in, but I have decided to make some other movies, that are going to be prequels. And so, go to town. And I think Jeff will agree with me. Dark Horse did some fantastic comics.
Yes, they did.
There have been some great novels out there. Apparently Delilah is a fan of the Boone ones. But hey, or not. But there were some great ones out there, you know, and where I'm coming from is I feel like, I don't know. It's like how people were so angry on the second season of Fringe because they sort of rebooted it.
Well, you know, I think also everybody has their thing. Like, one of my big things is Outlander, which those books, I got them at a very tentative part of my life. They've been a huge deal to me. I own them all. I read them all. I have signed copies.
Do you have the graphic novel?
I've read it. I don't have it.
Okay. Because I just did the graphic novel. I just did a review of it for Kirkus. I'm just going to put that plug in there right now. If you're a massive Outlander fan, apparently you're going to hate me.
Well, but I mean, that's everybody's fans. Like, you have that thing that you're rabid about that you know everything about. And so we find out that they're doing this movie. And you know, it's one of the first times something this close to me has been into a movie. And I was just going like, God, if they mess this up, I will lose all faith in humanity and get a baseball bat and hit the TV. And then, like, I saw it and I was like, my every dream is flawless. This is flawless. Even the horses are beautiful. And it was like, if it had been like Queen of the Damned bad,
don't even go there.
Yeah.
The one thing I'd add, Patrick, and this is
before you do that, Jeff, just to throw it out there for Delilah, they are actually now going to reboot the vampire movies.
I know. I've been my friend Derek Tatum is in charge of the horror track at Dragon Con, and we've been like playing around with like our dream cast, whether we went with like the younger cast or the slightly older cast, you know, where so we're very anxious to see what they come up with for those.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Even the bad ones are still good in a bad way.
Mm.
I think the problem here, Patrick, is that you're expecting Star Wars as a franchise to maintain some form of integrity. And I think that ship sailed a long time ago.
Han shot first.
To the point where, I mean, we can do a whole episode on the number of pant loads that we got delivered to us, and to be that upset over the fact that somebody's basically going to erase a lot of what happened, I'm not going to lose much sleep over it.
So what if, you know, I'm trying to put this into perspective for people so that maybe they'll understand the level of rage. You know, what if George R.R. Martin was sitting down and he said, you know what? I kind of like the way HBO, the direction that they're going with the TV show. Rather than finish the series, I'm going to start over and I'm going to rewrite them to match the show.
I still can't muster any rage for you, Patrick. I'm a diehard Superman fan, and considering that I've been exposed to Zack Snyder and the bad side of Bryan Singer,
you have been as abused as a human being can abuse. If that's your
So here's the thing about that. I'm going to do a huge spoiler here. If you haven't seen Man of Steel yet, you know, fast forward 10 minutes or whatever. So in the end scene of Superman, Man of Steel, he kills. And everybody's like, oh my God, Superman doesn't kill. Obviously, you've never seen Justice League, which was the DC animated show that was on Cartoon Network. Because if you had, you'd be going, oh, wait a minute. In that first 90-minute movie, he killed a bunch of aliens with his heat vision.
Also, he killed Zod in the
Burn. He killed Zod numerous times. Yeah, that was part of the mythos.
Yeah, the fact in the Burn mythos, that's the Kryptonian super criminals were the first and only people he killed, and his dealing with the fallout of that is why he never killed again. That's a big part. That is not. We could do a whole podcast. In fact, I did with Sean Duke and Paul Hemer, everything I hated about that movie, but. That's a whole that is not even begin to talk about what I hated about that movie. But I guess my point is, Star Wars is pretty bothering you, Patrick, because it's so explicit in this. But literally every continuity of any kind with any length has done this in a soft, progressive fashion known as the retcon, like Sherlock Holmes, the Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, anything that's not Scooby-Doo, for crying out loud. Oh, anything God. That's gone on for any length of time has had to reinvent itself. And for those of us that have borne the scars of decades of comic book fandom, there's good and bad with that. There's been reboots that have been a blessing. You know, Hawkman alone has been, blessed by forgetting huge swaths of his history.
Well, I liked the Hawk World comic. Is that what it was called? It was in the late 80s, early 90s.
Tim Truman book, yeah.
Where he and Shiera were here from Thanagar.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was a great series.
But to speak to what Jay is saying, and to call back to something Delilah mentioned before we started recording, DC sitting on Hawkman and Wonder Woman. Between the two of them, I think we're talking roughly 20 to 25 origin stories. Okay.
Yes.
Not just that, but 20 to 25 different actual natures. Wonder Woman was mortal child raised by Amazons. Then she was the product of God rape. And then she was.
Then she was mud. She was
clay.
Damn.
She was made of clay. Yeah.
She was a golem, basically.
Yeah. They, and Hawkman, good Lord. I don't even want to get me started on that.
You need four-dimensional space to map that family tree. It's insane.
And I think that is part of the, you know, the problem. I mean, if somebody said, look, let's just simplify Wonder Woman's origin. Let's basically make a big-budget remake of the Kathy Lee Crosby movie from 75 and say, look, she lives there. She's a member of the Amazon. Mother's sending her out on a mission. You know, add a little bit of pathos to it and stuff like that. Basically, the DC animated Wonder Woman movie that came out.
That was a wonderful movie.
Yeah. You know, basically simplify it, lose all the trappings and stuff like that. Yes, you could get away with it. The problem is, if you want to stick with quote-unquote canon, depending on which reboot you want to drop the needle on, there is no way you can tell the story of any DC character these days without, if you're going to look at the entire continuity of that character. I'm not talking about necessarily a comic book continuity, but the continuity of that character as a concept. There's no way you can do it without violations left and right. And that is simply the accrual of time and the number of hands that have been involved in it. And when you ramp it up to something like Star Wars, which went out of its way to have as many hands involved in it as possible, and managed, at least in the comics and somewhat in the books, to be under the reins of talented editors, you're still going to run into, and I'm not talking nitpicking stuff either. I'm talking, you know, basic concept stuff. And Lucas did it himself with the prequels. He basically started going, oh, there's an entire whole other part of this canon that I haven't told you about. It makes no sense, but we're going to say it's real from now on anyway.
Midichlorians.
Huh? Oh, God. I thought you meant chemistry between Anakin and Padme.
but not just that. But apparently this whole thing was the fulfillment of a prophecy as well. And, you know, it was just suddenly, hi, we need to add all these layers to something that didn't need layers added to it. So if they're going to strip a chunk of that away and make it slightly easier so that you can sit there and relate to the characters on the screen without having to sit there and every time a line is said by a character have to pause and go through this entire encyclopedia of everything that's been said by or about that character in the last 30 years, I think that's probably a good thing. That's, you know, just my take on it. Quite frankly, I'm not all that excited about the prospect of it anyway. So, I mean, like I said, with pant load after pant load, there's an entire hamper of filthy pants, you know, at the Lucas Ranch, just from the amount of, you know, stuff that he dropped. You know, it's canon incontinence is what it is.
Well, put it this way. It's sad to lose the Thrawn trilogy, but if it means we also lose the Ewok movies, that might be a fair trade.
I like the second Ewok movie.
Yep, yep.
With the giant spider and all that. That was a good little kids film. I had to babysit my cousins that night it was on, and they loved it. Quite frankly, so did I.
What were you saying, Delilah?
The Ewoks were my bridge into Star Wars as a kid. Like, the first time I was allowed to stay up past 8 o'clock was to watch the little Moon of Endor special with a little curly-haired blonde girl that crashed on Endor. Like, I will always love the Ewoks.
It's the Wilford Grimley one, isn't it?
But Jar Jar Binks is my Waterloo. Like, that's the thing that I'm like, if we could just all agree that that never existed, it would be awesome. Bye. Like, get rid of the Gungans.
But here's the thing. I would love to do a reboot and recontinuity, and let's start at the end of Empire and go redo Jedi with Wookiees instead of Ewoks and go forward and then never have prequels. Like, that's the Star Wars retcon I want.
not just that, but
deal I have to make. So
you just want like life day every day.
Yes.
Can he go get David Lynch back? Because I know we talked to him about Jedi for a while.
Yes, so. He did. He also talked to Spielberg, and Spielberg didn't do it because Lucas had that whole falling out with the Directors Guild. Because when he put the rolling credits on A New Hope back before it was A New Hope, it was written and directed by George Lucas as a combined credit, and that went to a snit fit with the Directors Guild for 10 years. And Spielberg's like, I love you, dude, but I still need the Directors Guild to like me.
Jay, I'm gonna slide the knife in your back and point out that there is a documentary, and there's now a trailer for the documentary of the lost Tim Burton Superman Lives movie that shows Nicolas Cage in the outfit. So there,
in the Electro suit,
yes.
Doing Superman Blue.
That's yes. Me.
Oh God. The great what?
And here's the other thing.
You can hear in his crib. Like, that's what happened when that movie was not made.
You can have. I'm going to give you right now. You can have your reboot of Star Wars from Empire forward. However, Michael Bay gets to make the movies.
You know what? It's still
because
maybe
I'm that evil
too.
Yeah. So you know. The people who are making the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, there you go.
Yeah. Don't get me started on this guy. He had literally admitted he gets a shot list of cool things he just wants to shoot and then hands like 6 reels worth of cool scenes to an editor and goes, make something put together that makes kind of a story. I don't care. That's literally his filmmaking technique, and he owns that.
So, Delilah, you were talking earlier before we started recording about the TMNT movie.
Oh, God.
Did you actually see it?
No, it looked so horrible to me that my mom was like, hey, the kids really want to see this movie. And I was like, that's awesome. You should take them. And so the morning after my book launch party, while I slept in, my mother took them to see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And they all thought it was the best movie ever. And I was like, great. All of the crappy movies you can totally take the kids to. This is a great deal for us. But no, I just visually, things just, I don't know. One of the worst things, I totally killed the mosquito. That was great. There's something that happens when writers and directors and every, like, you get too big for your britches and nobody can tell you no anymore. and things just spiral out of hand. I mean, it's like the last Children of the Earth book was like 4,000 pages long, but it's like in that movie, everybody's like, buddy, you know, they don't even look like turtles anymore. And Splinter's not even Asian. And he's got like this Fu Manchu and like, this is really racist. And there's no real cool bad guy. And he's like, no, man. Like muzzles.
And by the way, Delilah, I learned 14 years ago, it was 2000. I learned not to take kids to the movie that they want to see. Mm-hmm. Because the movie they wanted to see was called Battlefield Earth.
Oh, that's
I just threw up in my mouth.
Delilah, I'd also like to throw out there that as somebody who read the original black and white Ninja Turtle comics as they came out, what you just described, I felt that with the first cartoon, with the first movie. I have felt that numerous times already. So welcome to the club.
Okay, yeah,
and they've gone insane.
Those original black and white comics are much darker in tone, more adult, very, very different from what happened when, what was it, Archie Comics bought it or something, Jeff?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and started publishing them. It
went to a few hands before that, too, yeah.
And then it became, you know, the Secret of the Ooze kind of crap.
But yeah, they were doing Frank Miller. They were doing, you know, they were basically trying to tell a very dark satirical version of a number of Frank Miller stories.
Well, that's their origin, not to go too deep, but the whole original origin of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is what happened to the radioactive waste that created Daredevil after it created Daredevil.
Yep.
It fell in a sewer and made a mutant rat and four mutant turtles.
Mm-hmm.
That was the original.
That's what happens if you let Ben Affleck fall in your water supply.
Did they also create?
I'm sorry, that was very funny.
Jeff, did they also create the rabbit, the samurai rabbit?
Jimbo?
No,
he predates them.
No,
okay.
No, the only other thing that any of them created was that awful second heavy metal movie.
Oh God.
with the protagonist based on Julie Strain, so.
Who is married to one of the two creators.
Who's married to, Eastman's wife. Eastman's,
I didn't know if it was Eastman or Laird. It was one of them.
I'm pretty certain it's Eastman, yeah.
Okay.
So I don't think anybody else is as upset as I am about the reboot stuff. I'm still upset about Spider-Man being rebooted after just three movies. Mm-hmm. However, I am happy that Batman was rebooted after, you know, Batman and Robin and Batman Forever.
See, not all reboots are bad. Sometimes they're a blessing, sometimes they're a curse. But the thing about reboots is they always come back around.
Well, and now they're rebooting Batman again for the new Batman v Superman v Aquaman v Wonder Woman v whoever.
Yeah. Oh, yes, DC Comics. Let's just skip to our version of Avengers.
Yes.
Well, you know what? That's one of my costumes for Dragon Con.
Batman v Superman?
A Disney princess where I've got a huge ball gown and an Avengers corset. Just like, you're all Disney princesses now, basically.
Well, you know who else is a Disney princess now, Delilah?
Sure.
Princess Leia.
Who is a Disney princess?
Princess Leia.
Oh, yay. I can't wear white, though.
Always wear white.
Is it after Labor Day?
No, I'm just a very messy person. I don't need any white clothes.
Gotcha.
Something that Jay just said triggered the thought in me. When you think about it, all of these reboots are nothing more than corporately funded fanfic.
Mm-hmm.
That's not for fans, though. I'm coming to the point where I'm coming to terms a little bit with the fact that we're no longer the audience that they're trying to target with these things.
No,
we're the problem.
Precisely.
Well, no, they want us to get excited. That's all Comic-Con in San Diego is now, is let's drum up our evangelist force and send them out to proselytize for us. That's really what it has become. I didn't come up with that notion. That's Will Wheaton. I'm blatantly stealing from St. Will. But that's really what Comic-Con is now, is we are viewed as, oh, you're the diehards. If we put just enough fan service and just enough myth gags in there, you'll go out and go evangelize for us. And what's made Marvel work so well is that the guys in top of that, one, they've gone out of their way to get good directors. when Kenneth Branagh is the weak link in your crew, you're doing okay.
Yeah.
You know, but San Diego Comic-Con is a whole other conversation that we can have another time. I mean, do you guys know, oh my gosh, Chuck Rosansky?
No. Yes, I do.
So he is Mile High Comics. He's the president of Mile High Comics. Oh. And every year for the last 5 or 6 years, he sends out his newsletter following SDCC where he says, this is it. That was our final year. We're not going back because SDCC, they're just not selling comics. It's not about comic books anymore. It's just about movies. And it's about Hollywood. And I can't make any money. And then the next year he goes back again. And he just did that again. He just sent this thing where he said that, you know, they couldn't even break even going to SDCC. And so they're doing all these sales and please buy comics because, you know, they can't sell comics at Comic-Con anymore because no one wants comics at Comic-Con. They just want to, you know, see if they can get their picture taken with Jewel State if they're dressed as Kaylee or something like that. You know, that's it's not about comics anymore. And, well, and I kind of believe them. It's not. It's not about comics. It's about, like you said, it's about creating people to go out and talk about whatever property it is that they've you know, purchased.
But at the same time, that is what allows us to have the comics. I mean, I hear this with books a lot where people are like, you know, oh, it's just all about, you know, your idiot housewives buying 50 Shades or your grandmother buying Dan Brown. And you're like, yes. And the money that they make allows Simon & Schuster to give an advance to a little nobody like me so that I get to have a career because those huge people are doing things that I, you know, don't personally care for. But I mean, I think it's the same thing here where like, yeah, it's all this big greased oiled money machine, but that's what's keeping comics alive and letting, you know, like would we have Saga if Comic-Cons weren't such a big, huge deal?
No, we would not.
We wouldn't. And I agree with you completely, except the one thing that I would add to what Patrick said is that when this happens, a huge contingent of fandom follow suit, and you end up with a lot of people going along for the ride because they're not making that discrimination that they're not realizing what you're just saying, and as a result you get, you know, people that consider it to be a legitimate discussion to, you know, to start, you know, pounding over the last 30 years of continuity and to start talking about the way certain things get run and to talk about the way certain properties get handled and stuff like that. And they're not making the realization that, yes, there's a machine going on here and it's doing a certain thing and it has a set goal. And everybody who throws up their hands and says never again, then turns around and does it again, they're as complicit as anyone else. I stopped going to the movie theater when I was, you know, right before I turned 40, which was a long time ago. And I basically said this stuff is not paying off. It's not giving me the emotional and narrative investive return that I'm looking for. And I stopped watching a lot of TV and I dropped a lot of comics as well. And I've been pretty diehard with it. I've made a couple exceptions, but most times I wait till movies come out on cable to watch them. Because it's like, hey, this is just a machine. They're just basically here to you know, do their dirty little business on us so they can, you know, move on and get it, you know, get the next property under their belt. I hate to sound, you know, this cynical, but that's what it is. And I think it's fairly self-evident. We've seen this with so many different, you know, things that have come across the tracks dating back to shortly after, you know, fandom really started getting traction, you know, in the 80s and stuff like that. We've seen it repeatedly.
My only counter argument to that, Jeff, is that I think, especially on comic books, but to a lesser extent, novel fans of Star Wars and whatnot, they have to understand that people can be fans of a franchise or fans of a character and not be devoted to the particular version or media of mm-hmm. that character you are. There yep. are literally millions of devoted, diehard, passionate, perfectly legitimate Batman fans mm-hmm. who discovered and embraced and based their perception of the character on the 1990s Bruce Timm Batman animated series. And that is an extremely compelling version of Batman. Way mm-hmm. better than a lot of Denny O'Neill Batman, in my opinion. And that's heresy in some corners. And frankly, the Hugh Jackman Wolverine is a lot more interesting than a lot of the versions of Wolverine we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And Ahsoka Tano was one of the most compelling Star Wars characters that ever. It's Ahsoka. She's way better than Jar Jar.
Ahsoka.
Gesundheit.
Ahsoka Tano.
Yeah.
I was a huge on her, and then I saw my I guess she was like 11 then, but my cousin dressed up, and that was like her first cosplay was being Ahsoka Tano, and I was like, oh, there's someone else in the family that's weird. So I have kind of
I think we also have to keep in mind, when I discovered sci-fi, my first entrance to sci-fi, besides Star Wars and Star Trek, was Knight Rider. And for God's sakes, don't go back and watch Knight Rider.
I knew it. I hear it comes. Here it comes.
It's just awful. Or Airwolf, or Stringfellow
Hawk. Best name. I mean,
placed by his brother Sinjin Hawk.
Yes. When you get into the naming of characters, and Delilah, I hope you'll support me on this. There are some really, really cool character names. Stringfellow Hawk is a cool one. Sinjin Hawk is another one. Box Mulder.
Characters?
Huh?
We're talking Star Wars characters?
No, this was Airwolf.
Yeah, okay, I was going to say, I claim Kit Fisto as worst name ever.
Stringfellow Hawk was Jan Michael Vincent. Is that his name?
Yes.
He steals a helicopter, a prototype helicopter, from the government or from the shadowy CIA or something like that, because he doesn't trust them with it. And it's the fastest helicopter in the world, and it's got guns and missiles and everything on it. And yeah, that was that. So, but that was the coolest name ever.
It
was the coolest thing ever. You know, here's this guy sitting on the dock by the lake, and he's playing his cello, and the eagles are flying by. And then the next thing you know, he's, you know, flying in his Airwolf.
Same stock footage.
Yes, I would say that they were probably almost as bad as Filmation on reusing the same cutscenes over and over and over again, like He-Man running towards you. Yeah.
Here's how bad this show is, Delilah, if you've not seen it. His CIA contact, his code name is Archangel. He always wears a completely white suit but has an eye patch.
A black eye patch, yes.
That sounds fantastic. I mean, that sounds like something off of Archer.
Oh, it was such a good
show. This is what Archer is parodying, is these shows.
Oh, okay. Well, then, well played, sirs.
Yes.
Phrasing.
Can I just say that I've been out of Star Wars for so long now, I don't even know who Ahsoka is.
Ahsoka. So this is the way it goes, Jeff. They did the prequel movies, and which is the path of Anakin Skywalker to becoming Darth Vader, to the point where, you know, where he slaughters all the Jedi. And so for the second movie, The Clone Wars, they also did an animated movie called The Clone Wars, where they decided to give Anakin Skywalker the darkest character ever created, because he's going to be this hugely big, bad guy, a plucky young female sidekick. So you are watching The Clone Wars television series the whole time going, oh, God, one day he's going to kill her.
Yep.
Because that's not depressing.
Except that he doesn't, because they actually write their way out of that corner, which I was rather impressed with.
Spoilers, sweetie.
Yeah. The thing about that character as his apprentice is that she has an arc and she develops.
She absolutely does.
As opposed to everyone else that's in continuity, like Obi-Wan and Anakin, who are just completely static and dull and don't have any character evolution.
Actually, Obi-Wan had some decent moments too. We got to learn a lot about Obi-Wan. Lisa and I have talked about this a lot, Lisa Pate Spindler, because Lisa's problem with Ahsoka in the beginning was that she was running around in a little half shirt. You know, here's this mm-hmm. little girl running around in a basically a tube top. Eventually they gave her a little more clothing and she was growing up, and they kind of made her, you know, a little bit more of a badass. And once they started doing that and giving her some clothes and having her, you know, be a real character, I think Lisa started to like her a lot more.
Well, you know, the thing is, I didn't like that either, the tube top thing. But then I have this daughter, and she has much more style than I've ever had. She's always cared about clothes, and not in a fussy, is this embroidered, but in a I want to look like a punk rock star superhero witch. And she loves to show her belly, and not, it's like she doesn't have any concept of it as sexy, because I haven't shown my belly to anyone in 13 years, but she just loves to have her belly free. And like, that's her, she would make her own tube tops because she thought that that was just the cutest look. And like, there's this very kind of innocent sort of looking at it from not the, the, you know, adult who's looking for the slut shaming and the whatever, but like, they just like to let their bellies hang out. Their little round bellies. So like, I don't mind it as much now, but yeah, the first time I was like, oh, great. It's a baby Barbie outfit.
You know, I really hope that someday we'll have the same sort of liberty and freedom to do that with male ass crack in movies.
No. But
for the time being, I don't.
And I tell you what, you know, that went out of style with the Super Mario Brothers movie.
There was no style in that movie. Let's be clear.
Bob Hoskins. No one wanted to see that. No, I was going to say is actually, you know, I didn't have a problem with showing my belly for the longest time either, Delilah. And then I saw Mike Myers' Fat Bastard in the Austin Powers movies, and that just cured me of it forever.
Yeah.
Mike Myers has broken a lot of us in a lot of ways.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, I bet you can't wait for when Jimmy Fallon reboots that movie.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Huh? You didn't even think about that, okay. Did you?
Are you guys on Twitter right now?
Right now, this very actually, moment?
No, I'm unitasking.
Okay, I'm posting now a picture of the Ahsoka Tano costume my daughter made when she was 4.
Oh, very cool. So a week from now, when people hear this, they can still go out and find that.
Yeah, I mean, I just posted it on Twitter, and it says, you know. Blog necromancy. Remember when you see that she wore her underwear as a one sleeve shirt, but that's her Ahsoka Tano costume, and like she was seriously kicking butt. So this is, you know, it's doing good in the world.
That's awesome, and that's a lot better than the one John wore last year.
The whole Darth Bagel thing was just not well thought out.
I wasn't supposed to talk about that. Anyway, so
it's very good. That's very good. That's a very good costume.
It is. It's awesome.
Is she kicking the head from someone there?
Yeah, she was doing like a ninja Jedi kick. That's her brother, who was probably 2 at the time. I'm sure she didn't hurt him. He's a fantastic big sister, but he definitely followed. He's more of a Sith than she is. All the way.
So yeah, you know, the whole sharing the picture on Twitter thing while we're recording, that's not going to make people go, this is a audio podcast, we can't see it. Yeah,
put it in the show notes.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, if you Google Delilah S. Dawson Ahsoka Tano, you'll find it.
So what I'm wondering is, should we retcon sfsignal.com? Should we just redo the whole thing? Start over. Wipe out the review of the Quantum Thief.
I would say let's reboot it to right before you joined. We bring JP back in a much bigger. You know, we need to know his backstory a little bit more.
Here's the thing. Now hold on, Jeff. Seriously, if you can get JP to speak, to talk, to show up, to be in the public eye, dude, I will buy you a bottle of your favorite bourbon. I really will. Because now, just so people understand, we've talked about this before. John lurks, and he is listening, and he's aware of what we're talking about. JP stood up against the wall at Worldcon last year, John, and John's saying that he was out there and he was talking to people. He stands up against the wall, and I had to drag him away from the wall to introduce him to people.
Well, he talked with me, and I'm really the only one that matters. So, you know,
that's true. I went to one Boscone, and you were the only person from SF Signal I saw there.
Yeah, I think we were the only ones who were there. Yeah.
JP is an awesome guy. I know he does. He's like the guy in the background. You know, he's the ninja. That's what he is. He's the bagel ninja.
I think aside from World,
I'm saying that.
So
aside from WorldCon last year, the meat space meeting of the Three Horsemen the beginning of this month was the I'm sorry, no, ReaderCon. I met John Jamie and Andrew at ReaderCon about 6 years ago.
So the real reason for this podcast tonight was I did receive an email from a publicist at Pocket who said that they're going to be rebooting this these three books in the Blood series. They're going to make them into these. No?
No, I wish. That would be fantastic. I mean, I did sell book four, so like it's that one goes back to the first book, so I guess this is my I get to retcon some stuff, but
all right. So any final thoughts that are coherent or relevant to the subject at hand, Jay?
Relevant and coherent? God, you're asking a lot.
I know.
Just that continuity has always been fluid. It will always be fluid. I think the issue with Star Wars is that they made the mistake of being explicit about it and having a hard cutoff point. And for a lot of Star Wars fans who hadn't been in other fandoms, that was new. Those of us that had been tormented and tortured by editors for decades in other media, notably comic books, just sort of like, oh, yeah, welcome to the party. We've been through this before. So, it gets easier over time. You know, your first betrayal is always the hardest. Hmm.
Delilah?
I guess I would just urge anyone that's upset over this to develop a sort of short-term amnesia and just look at it like new stories. I mean, it doesn't matter how mad you get. You clearly can't control anything that Lucas does with Star Wars, so you might as well just hang on to your hat and hope for the best, because he's going to be cray.
Jeff?
I really thought we were going to be talking about books tonight.
Well, talk about the books. You
I was all set research to talk about, you know, Michael Moorcock and Joanna Russ and really try to raise the bar on this
Hugo-nominated
podcast as opposed to pandering to fandom. But instead, I'll just say that, you know, reboots are what they are. They are a very popular tool in the toolbox for the moneymakers right now. And, you know, it's something that we have to live with, and I think it's gotten to the point where they now say, "Hey, if we know a reboot's going to sell, just out of, you know, sheer curiosity, whatever, aside from anything the fandom brings to it, then I would say, we have to accept that until it falls out of fashion. And if somebody finally stumbles across a franchise that can maintain, you know, its narrative integrity, not necessarily its quality integrity, but its narrative integrity over a stretch of time, then good for them. And I await that day.
Jeff, have you ever spoken with Fred Kish?
Huh?
Have you ever spoken with Fred Kish?
Oh, yeah, several times.
So you know Fred?
Yeah, I know Fred.
Okay. So in that case, you should have learned your lesson from Fred. There's no point in doing research for these things.
Can I say one thing?
Yes.
I heard someone react. It was in public. I think it might have been in Guardians of the Galaxy waiting for it to start. I heard somebody react to the news about, there's going to be a Star Wars theme park. Be like, oh, God, I can't believe they're doing that to Star Wars. And I was like, how dead is your heart inside that you hear they're going to make a theme park of your favorite thing and your first thought is, oh, like, even if they mess it up, like, I still want to walk into Mos Eisley Cantina. Even if all I get to do is punch size noodles, it'll be worth it.
Well, there's two things about that, Delilah.
I think that's an actual ride they're building, punch size noodles. I think it's a lot of e-tickets, but it's worth it.
There's two things. So when I was a younger person and I lived in California, And I've tried to wipe most of that memory, but when I was living there, one of the things that I got to do was go quite young to Disneyland, and for me at that time, it was after Jedi. The coolest thing that you could possibly do was go to Disneyland and go on Star Tours.
Mm-hmm.
That was the coolest thing. So to have a Star Wars theme park, I think is fine. I don't have a problem with that. There was another point that I completely lost now. What else were you talking about? There was something else you said that was good.
Being dead inside.
which is always good. Let's face it. It's the best survival tactic.
Going into Mos Eisley. So you do have to be careful what you wish for. I remember the other cool thing that, I grew up on Star Trek. Las Vegas had Star Trek The Experience.
Oh, yeah. The bar.
And you could go through Quark's bar.
Yeah.
In fact, you had to go through Quark's bar to get to the ride that you were on. And I thought that was so cool. And apparently it's like all gone now.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
They completely closed it down.
They shut it down after, I want to say.
Like half buried in a dumpster.
What?
Somewhere there is a dead Ferengi half buried in a dumpster.
Or at least the mask. Yeah,
that was
inconceivable.
I actually had lunch at that bar, and we were joined by both a Ferengi and a Klingon during the course of the meal. They kind of walked around and mixed it up with the crowd, and it was quite funny.
Hmm.
Like Disney princesses.
So, did everybody get the reference when I said inconceivable to the Ferengi?
Wallace Shawn, yes. Who was Vizzini, was also the Grand Negus.
Yes. Inconceivable.
And he's on Adventure Time. I hear him sometimes in the middle of the night, and I'm like, hey, Vizzini.
he's also great as the, I think the character's name is the Mysterious Stranger in Woody Allen's Radio Days.
Yes.
The shadow type character.
Uh-huh.
Beware, evildoers, wherever you are.
He has such a distinctive voice. You put all that Ferengi makeup on him, and you can still tell who it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
See, I'm waiting for the fan cut of Guardians of the Galaxy, where they just impose all his lines on a rocket raccoon. I don't know, if just wish something into being when this thing hits when this podcast hits the web.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
I threw the gauntlet down to the wrong part of the internet on that one.
So
yeah. Wait, someone's going to be angry on the internet?
That's never happened before. So Michelle and I went and saw Guardians of the Galaxy, and she got really excited because the dude from Gilmore Girls was in it. Do you know that guy, the brother of the director?
Oh, Sean Gunn.
Kirk, I guess, was Kirk from Gilmore Girls was in it. No one cares.
Who did he play? I aired every episode.
Yondo's like sidekick. Dude.
Oh, yes. I did know that. Yes.
The first lieutenant of the Ravagers.
Yes, that's the one.
Thank you, Jay. Jay, you need to like provide subtitles for like life. You know, just so people know these
things. By the way, if we want to completely alienate the entire internet, Jeff, you and I should have a podcast where we theorize about who the Marvel Cinematic Universe version of Peter Quill's father is going to be.
Thanos.
Actually, I think it's going to be Starhawk. But, like, there's six people who know who that is. Probably one of them.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the original Guardians of the
Galaxy. Fred's read just about everything. He's pretty much up to speed now. So
I think his father is going to be Jack Kirby's version of Groot.
I think his father is going to be the Cloud Galactus from FF2.
Oh, I'm going to hurt you. Otherwise known as the Galactus from the Ultimate Universe.
The mother actually said your father was made of light, so.
What if she wasn't able to finish the sentence because they were interrupting her, and really it all ties back to that end scene credit? Easter egg at the very end.
You think Cosmo is his dad?
Howard the Duck.
Or Cosmo.
Oh, God, if it was Cosmo, that'd be epic.
Well, he would then, therefore he would have, like, not dual citizenship, but like triple citizenship. U.S., American, and like Novan or whatever he's got. So,
although I don't think Cosmo is ancient.
I just want to see Cosmo and Rocket Raccoon share the spaghetti scene from Lady in the...
What if it's Odin? What if they just tie it all together with Thor? Odin came down as a bolt of lightning.
It's going to be
but at the same time, if they can introduce a new character for people to squee over and have a new action figure, like, they're not going to miss that chance.
But they still don't have Dancing Groot.
You can't get an action figure of Dancing Groot.
They're freaking out over it.
I figured that was the only reason that scene was in the movie, was they were going to release a toy the following week. And it wasn't until I saw that somebody built one on Etsy that I said, wow, that's somebody really missed the boat on that one.
They did, big time, yeah.
Oh, no, it's going to be the 2015 Comic-Con exclusive. You know this.
So all right. this is a Hugo-nominated podcast, huh?
I think that's more of an indictment of, like...
What's funny is, so and didn't DiNardo just like send you, Jeff, and John and Fred a really nice link to an email where someone said that they really wished you guys had been nominated?
Yes.
And yet you weren't?
Yeah, no, we weren't.
I voted for you.
We're playing the long game.
No, I did. I nominated you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And I think we've done, I've been pretty happy with the content so far.
I mean, I nominated you and you haven't even had your first episode yet.
We do qualify for nomination 2 years in a row, by the way. So.
Have you had Delilah on yet? No. So therefore you haven't had your first episode.
We've only had 3 guest horsemen on and we're only on once a month. So
I bet I'm more of a horseman than any of y'all because I have a horse.
Well, we are horsemen, H-O-A-R-S-E, so.
You got to remember that Delilah lives in the wilds, so come the apocalypse, she's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Based on your bio, you live in the lesser of two Roswells, correct?
No, that's my hometown, but I moved up to the mountains.
Ooh.
She moved out of the holler and into the mountains.
Okay.
Roswell's not a holler. Roswell's uptown, bro. We still have plantations over there.
I was just trying to make you sound a little more country.
Bear in mind,
oh, yeah, no,
you're on a podcast in Kentucky. I know from
the accent out of me.
All right, we got to stop this. We got to stop the train now. All right.
Is it the train to Hogwarts?
No, it's the train to Petticoat Station. So, or Petticoat Junction. Oh, I can't believe I screwed that up. Jeff's never going to let me forget that. Petticoat Junction, which is, you know, they're basically taking a bath in the water that the town drinks, which is just disgusting, and they got the dog in there too, which is just gross. But anyway, let's say goodbye. Delilah, website, social media, all that good stuff. Anything else you want to tell people to go check out?
Yes, I am Delilah S. Dawson. You can find me at whimsydark.com. I also blog for the holytacochurch.com. And all of my social media is Delilah S. Dawson. So that's on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, Spotify, Facebook, Pinterest, and your mom. And I have a new book out called Servants of the Storm, which is YA Southern Gothic. And it's very creepy and fun and involves storm demons, Savannah, Georgia, and fox-eared girls.
Very cool. Jay?
You can find out more about me, and there's not that much to learn, at jgarman.net. And I encourage everyone to tune into Tech Talk Radio at wrlr.fm.
Yes, you should.
Jeff.
Jeff Patterson 11 on Twitter, blog at Gravity Lens on Bad Day Studio, am one of the three horsemen, which can be heard on this and stations like this. And I have an ebook out that's been out for a while called Don't Tweet Where You Eat, which is available for Kindle on Amazon.
Very cool. And for those people who have been listening, we are supposed to be reading a book that we're going to talk about at some point. This is a completely original idea that I had that no one else has ever done ever on a podcast, which is that we read a book and then we talk intelligently about it. And it's called Annihilation. It's Jeff Vandermeer. Fred picked it. So if you don't like it, blame him. If you don't want to read it, blame him. But sometime in August, probably like the last episode in August, we're going to talk about this book that probably no one is reading because we all forgot about it. I know for a fact that actually DiNardo is 3/4 of the way through. So he will be on that episode talking about that book with us, which is just awesome. I'm stating that right now on the podcast. So it's official canon and cannot be retconned ever. Ever. Ever.
Okay, there were at least 2 lies in that. One is a promise of us talking intelligently about anything. And 2, anyone with an audio post-production suite saying you can't retcon something.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. So, look for that. And if you are a listener and you want to read it so that you can sit there and cuss at us as we're talking about the book, please feel free to do that. We encourage that. And then you can leave tons of comments for us. If you have any thoughts about this particular podcast and everything we're talking about with reboots and retcons and all that good stuff, and whether or not George R. R. Martin should start rewriting Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time from the point of view of, I don't know.
The sword.
Rand's father, Tam. From Tam Althor. It's going to be all from Tam's point of view. You know, put that in the comments, and we'll be sure to pay attention to that. Probably not. I am ATFMB everywhere. Thanks, everybody, for coming on, and we'll, you know, see you next time.
Thank you so much for having us.
And the winner of the 2014 Hugo Award for Best Fancast is... SF Signal Podcast by Patrick Hesto. This award will be accepted by Gail Carriger.
So, in case you were in any doubt, I'm not Patrick. Sorry. But he did give me a speech. And it's cold in here, so my nose is running. Sorry again. So, I'm now Patrick. Imagine me with a beard. Wow. I want to thank all the Hugo voters for giving me the opportunity to finally wear my Gail Carriger costume. Seriously, where else was I going to wear it but here at Worldcon? You can't imagine the looks I get when I wear it in Colorado. The SF Signal podcast wouldn't exist without you, the listeners and fans, and all of the wonderful people who have contributed to the weekly panels, and the authors who have come in for interviews and on. To all of you, this award is yours as much as it is mine, but I'm going to keep it in my house. Gail has my address, and she better ship it to me. Seriously, don't make me come and find you, Gail. I would like to thank a few folks. First off, Robert Silverberg for always doing his speech after the fan awards. Gail Carriger for being awesome. My fellow nominees who will be up here themselves soon. You wait and see. The Hugo voters for loving what we all do, and of course, John DiNardo, editor and bagel overlord, who never filed a restraining order. I'd also like to thank Karen Burnham, Fred Kitsch, Ashley Crump, Derek Johnson, Jim Gates, Jeff Patterson, Jessica Strider, John Stevens, Lisa Pate Spindler, Paul Weimer, Rhonda Ulle, Jay Garman, Sarah Chorn, Derek Johnson, Stina Light, AJ Sykes, Kristen Centronelli, Jamie Todd Rubin, Rhea Bridges, Matthew Stanborn Smith, Gail Carriger, Django Wetzler, JP France, and everyone else who has ever been on the show but are too numerous to list here. I love you all. Thank you. And don't forget, we're recording next Wednesday.